That'll preach, as they say. I have been so nervous this week because I think some of you might be here because last week I stood right up here and I said, next week might be the most important sermon I've ever preached. And I don't know what got into me. Like, I hadn't planned that. I don't know if it was we're getting to the end of this series and it's about pride or if I got really fired up by my Mary's preaching or what. But I stood up here and I kind of pulled that out of my air. I mean, I think it's the air. I kind of pulled that out of the air. And then I had to live with it all week. So did you. Well, it kind of turns out that, you know, God's time, I think maybe God was ready for an important sermon. And I certainly felt in the presence of this community and in the presence of God, I felt ready by the time we got here. So let me start with one of my favorite, absolute favorite scriptures to preach on. But I have to give you some background. So I'm going to be preaching about the anointing of King David, but I need to give you this background first. So God's chosen people of Israel had been for years besieged by enemies from everywhere, and they were frightened, and they decided that they must have a king, a political king who could conscript soldiers and muster an army and who could defend them and take care of them. But this notion of a king offended God. God wanted to love the people, bless the people, lead the people. God desired to be sovereign over Israel. But the people were scared, and they demanded to be like other nations, not a nation under God, but a nation under a king. So God granted their wish and had the prophet Samuel anoint Saul as their king. And things were okay for a little while, but then, as they say, maybe Saul kind of started to believe his own press a little bit. And he forgot that he was nothing without God. And so God chose another king for Israel. And that's where we're going to enter the story this morning, with God telling Samuel, Saul is no longer the king of the people. I am replacing Saul, and Samuel, I want you to go down, stop grieving over Saul, and go down and anoint a new king. So that's where we are, 1 Samuel, the 16th chapter, starting with verse 1. The Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you grieve over Saul? I have rejected him from being king over Israel. Fill your horn with oil and set out. I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided for myself a king among his sons." Samuel said, "How can I go? If Saul hears of this, he will kill me." And the Lord said, "Take a heifer with you and say, 'I've come to sacrifice to the Lord.' Invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show you what you shall do. And you shall anoint for me the one whom I name to you." Samuel did what the Lord commanded and came to Bethlehem. The elders of the city came to meet him, trembling, and said, "Do you come peaceably?" And he said, "Peaceably. I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Sanctify yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice." And he sanctified Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. When they came, he looked on Eliab and thought, "Surely the Lord's anointed is now before the Lord." But the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord does not see as mortals see. They look on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." Then Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel, and he said, "Neither has the Lord chosen this one." Then Jesse made Shammah pass by, and he said, "Neither has the Lord chosen this one." And Jesse made seven of his sons pass before Samuel, and Samuel said to Jesse, "The Lord has not chosen any of these? Samuel said to Jesse, are all your sons here? And Jesse said, there remains the youngest yet, but he is keeping the sheep. And Samuel said to Jesse, send and bring him, for we will not sit down until he comes here. He sent and brought him in. Now, he was ruddy and had beautiful eyes and was handsome. The Lord said, rise and anoint him, for he is the one. Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers, and the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon David from that day forward. Samuel then set out and went to Ramah. God sent Samuel down to Bethlehem, little unassuming Bethlehem, to anoint Israel's next king. Some of you are about to experience deja vu because I'm going to say some things to you that I've been saying for 16 years. And here's where we start. Tag, you're it. That must have been what it felt like to David. I mean, he was, after all, a mere child. No one had ever considered him for this kind of leadership. Goodness, there was his older brother, Eliab, who was strong and handsome. He should have been it. And there was Abinadab, next oldest, whose name means willingness. And that's a great quality to have in a leader. But no. Tag, you're it, Samuel pronounced upon David. Young, reluctant upstart in a second-tier town down in the south. Without stretching myself too much, I can imagine the Sufi master Hafiz wrote his poem called Tag, You're It for that shepherd boy, David. Listen how it goes. God, disguised as a myriad of things and playing a game of tag, has kissed you and said, you're it. I mean, you're really it. Now, it does not matter what you believe or feel, for something wonderful, major league wonderful, is someday going to happen. We are soon to be 49 years young, a prodigy of the South. And I still have no doubt in my heart that you are it. A new kind of Christian church about to do your part in many major league wonderful things. Not that you haven't already started. Like David, you were born amidst great celebration. You've learned to crawl and then walk and then run the race that has been set before you. You've been learning, and sometimes now you're even called upon to teach the younger ones. Day by day, you're weaving yourself into the fabric of your family, of your community. Still, like David, you're sometimes hard to find. Quiet, like a well-kept secret. You're way out there in the south pasture, tending to God's sheep and doing an excellent job. But now, tag, you're it. You're being called up to the major leagues. I have trusted for 16 years now that we're it. And though I didn't know the slings and arrows would come in quite this hot and heavy, and didn't know that Goliath would be named COVID, and that people would stop coming to church in droves, I haven't really ever doubted who we are and who we're becoming. And I still don't doubt it, but I'm paying more attention. I'm older, maybe wiser, and I know that there are other stories of David, not just the David who was anointed king and went out to battle and slew Goliath. there's another story of David now that moves me just as much in a different way. It's this one I'm about to share with you. And please don't get thrown by how this could never happen, wouldn't happen. We wouldn't want it to happen now. Because it was written thousands of years ago. Trust it. Trust what this story is about. Listen to what happened to that older, tireder, faithful David, who was a man after God's own heart. King David was old and advanced in years, and although they covered him with clothes, he could not get warm. So his servants said to him, "Let a young woman be sought for my lord the king, and let her wait on the king and be his attendant. Let her lie beside him so that my lord the king may be warm." So they searched for a beautiful young woman throughout all the territory of Israel and found Abishag the Shunammite and brought her to the king. The young woman was very beautiful. She became the king's attendant and comforted him, and the king did not know her sexually. I think that's a beautiful story too. Who are we? And who do we want to become? And for the purpose of today, who are you? And who do you want to be? For while I am still the leader, I am more mindful than ever that I can only lead you where you want to go. So who are you, Uprising? You are the young King David, brave and loyal. You have faced adversity. And I don't just mean the big stuff. I mean the everyday, this is who it takes to live in my truth. Here I stand, this is who I am, every day of our lives stuff. That takes courage too. One of my all-time favorite memories is about the everyday courage it takes to be you. I hadn't been on staff very long when I was down at the Capitol doing what you have to do if you live in Texas just to protect your basic human rights. There I was, the lesbian pastor from the gay church. And I saw across the rotunda Scott, our Scott, board member Scott. This was 15 years ago. And I knew that Scott could not particularly be who he was and be himself among the people that he worked with and worked for. I was very sensitive to that. So when I saw him, I said hello, but didn't let on how we knew each other and kind of walked on, because here I was, the lesbian pastor. And I heard him coming up behind me. He said, Karen, let's talk a minute. And I said, oh, well, Scott, I was just trying to be careful to, you know, to honor your space here. And he said, nothing would ever be worth not being able to recognize my pastor in public. Yeah. Everyday courage, everyday bravery, everyday faithfulness and loyalty, and you know all about that. And one of my other all-time favorite memories happened just last week. Susan was our deacon on call, and so during communion time, she had to get up and go to the back of the sanctuary to be deacon on call, and that means she left her mom, 90-something, sitting in her wheelchair, alone at the end of the row for about 1 second. And then big, black, queer Reverend Tony got up, walked around, sat down by the 90-something-year-old white straight woman, took her hand. She put her head on his shoulder. And that, too, is who we are. Love, kindness, compassion, two completely different stories. Who are you? Which of those are you? And who do you want to be? I've talked to a lot of you this week, and your answer was clear. Which one do you want to be? Both and. Both and. We can do it all. We are still brave and committed, and we know we face giants, and we are gentle, loving, compassionate people of all kinds who sometimes just want to rest in that, just want to enter the sanctuary of this safe space. Well, until I am notified otherwise, I am the one you have given the privilege of leading you into the brave and gentle future. And I'm as excited about that as I have ever been. But I take it all a little more seriously, and I am much more tuned in to where you want to go and how I should lead you. I hadn't been on the job very long when I got a letter in my office mailbox. It didn't have a return address. It said, "Dear Reverend Thompson, you have been the pastor of MCC Austin for a few months now. Though you weren't our choice, we thought we should give you some time to see how things went. Now we have to say what's on our hearts. You need to understand that our church doesn't need a coach. You often refer to yourself that way and you use sports analogies, but we need you to be a pastor who loves us and cares for us. We hope you will take this seriously." And they forgot to sign it. That hit me. You can imagine that hit me. And I've struggled with that for a long time, you know, because I do think of myself as a coach, and what that means to me is that I need to find good people, teach them, equip them, and mold them into a team that is somehow greater than the sum of its parts. But I've kind of struggled with that for a long time until pretty recently, when I discovered in the Harvard Business Review, now there's some street cred right there, I discovered in the Harvard Business Review that coaching is a legitimate leadership style. Quote, "A style of leadership that focuses on developing people for the future through delegation and developmental exercises." Practice. Practice. So I think this old coach still got a few things up her sleeve. And I want to share them with you because I want to make sure we're still going in the same direction. So in no particular order, I want to tell you some of the things I believe I need and some of the things we have. And these are in no particular order. Number one, despite all our conversations about finances and mortgages and declining offerings, I do not need more money from you. There is no capital campaign on our horizon, but some of you have more money and you will give it freely and it brings you great joy. Amen to that. But you know, some people are bemoaning the fact that people have become less generous. The total numbers seem to be down. I don't believe that at all. You haven't become less generous in any way. In fact, some studies suggest that generosity has actually increased, that people are giving more. They're just giving more to more places. people who never would have thought of contributing to a political campaign, for example, because they didn't have to, now feel like they have to. People are contributing to Planned Parenthood and to the arts. They never knew that the arts would be under fire. And I know that many of you are contributing financially and in other ways to your nieces and your nephews, and here's a big one, to your parents and your siblings. You're not any less generous. Now, I've been studying and I've been reading, and I came across this book called We Aren't Broke, and it's about the church specifically and nonprofit organizations. We Aren't Broke, and here's the underlying theme to that. You may not have enough dollars, but you have something. We have a lot of somethings, but the big something that we have is 10 gorgeous acres in Austin. Do you know how many organizations can't even fathom a way to get their hands on a resource like that? Just because you have money don't mean you can find the land or have the opportunity to purchase it. So I'm ready for us to start having big ideas about how to maximize our property value. Not in ways that significantly change who we are or what we do, but in ways that are excellent stewards of this property. The second thing I need for us to share a game plan, to share a philosophy. When I used to coach my kids' summer teams, often on the first day of practice, I would take in my house plans, my blueprints from the house that I built. And I'd take them in, and I'd show them the plan, and I'd say, now, this is the plan for my house. And I love my house. It's beautiful. And I am just so thankful that when it came time to build my house, the architect, the general contractor, the plumber, the electrician, were all working from the same set of plans. Now, these aren't the only plans. There are lots of beautiful houses in my neighborhood, and they used a different plan. This is not the only plan that will work, but I guarantee you we've all got to be working the same plan. I have ideas, and your board and other people contribute to the creation of those ideas and those plans. So you do not hear me standing here saying what that one guy often says, I am the only one who can fix it. But I am saying, I am one who can fix it with you. We need to have the same plan. And I don't care how you choose to fit into that team. I mean, it takes it all. You can be a starter, you can be on the bench, you can be in the bleachers, you can work the concession stand, the coffee bar, you can be a cheerleader. But there is no position for a witcher or a whiner. I might have gotten a consonant wrong. I am not saying that we cannot disagree. Some of the best work we ever do comes out of disagreements, because when we're handled with respect and open and creative minds, sometimes we find out that the disagreement is because we haven't reached the best solution yet. And thank God for those who are willing to say no or wait, but to do it in a respectful, loving way. I recognize that we are all on the same team way. I need a strong front office. The people who don't have to get down in the weeds but can be figuring out the big ideas. How do we market? Where do we need changes? Do we need to, you know, what do we need? And thank God we've got a great front office in our board of directors. They already bring big ideas. They are up for hard decisions. One of the things I want us to do is to get better and better at communicating all the things that are going on behind the scenes. And part of that means I need you to be receptive to receiving the communication about all those things that are going on behind the scenes. Not just twice or three times a year at a congregational forum, but check into a board meeting or read the board minutes there, or here's an idea, read the newsletter. I need an assistant coach, and thank God you have provided one, and she starts Monday. Yes, Amanda's been on our staff for a long time, but in a part-time way as our program director, and now she's ready to step into her place as an associate pastor. It has been 9 years since Reverend Alicia left, and we had another pastor on staff. 9 years. There are lots of things, lots of areas where I've just tried to keep our head above water. Thank God for those of you who are helping in that effort. But now we've got that person who can be dedicated to particular ministries and growing them and increasing them and pastoral care and listening to you and supporting the deacons. And I am so very excited about that. Somebody asked me when they heard this sermon last night, well, what about Reverend Bill? Reverend Bill is wonderful and amazing, and he is a professor at the University of Texas who has never actually been, you know, in that building in an office on our staff. And so, yeah, this is it. Thank you for providing for that. One more thing. I need a scoreboard. Now, I've got a story behind this. When I was finishing seminary and before my ordination, I had to go through extensive psychological evaluation. That's a scary thought, but when I did okay. I didn't scare anybody, and when I got to the end, the evaluator sat down with me, and he said, this looks pretty good, but I have one great concern. Your background is in competitive sports and athletics. You played and you coached, and all that time, you always had a scoreboard. And you could look right up at that scoreboard and see how you'd done. And I'm a little bit worried that when you start working as a pastor and there's no scoreboard, that might be really hard for you. When you walk out of church on a Sunday morning, where are you going to look to see if you did your job well, if you preached a good sermon, if you... I thought he was wrong. I still kind of think he's wrong about that part. Because I've gotten to where I don't need that scoreboard, and I can walk out and I can say, God, I was faithful, and I listened, and I spoke in a faithful way. But here's the mistake I made. I don't need that scoreboard, but I definitely need a scoreboard. We do a lot of planning and implementing and then talking about how well we've done and how good it feels. We did a great job of that. We're doing this. We're coming along with that. As several of our board members pointed out, but Scott was probably the most eloquent, we need absolute metrics. We need focus. We need strategy. We need to know every step of the way how we're doing, not just how it feels, but we need those scoreboards. And so be looking for us to be implementing some of those and ask about them and how they're working. And we might ask you to incorporate some metrics, some measurements into the work that you are doing as well. I'm going to end with one of my favorite all-time coaching stories. I was the assistant coach at Dripping Springs High School a long time ago. And we had an average team. Ordinarily, we had a fantastic team, but we had an average team. In fact, we didn't even qualify for the playoffs, not the first round. But we did tie for third place, which meant we got to play a playoff game to get into the playoffs. And we won. And then we won again, And we won again, and we won again. And all of a sudden, this team that's not so great is playing in the regional finals for the chance to go to the Final Four, to the state tournament. And we are playing a team, the Llano Yellow Jackets, who had kicked our butts twice already in that season. And that game went just like the other two. In fact, with less than 2 minutes left, we were 8 points behind. Our head coach called the timeout and brought the girls over. I couldn't imagine what he really had to say. I didn't think many X's and O's were going to get the job done, and I expected something from him like, all right, we're going to lose this game. We'll get to work again tomorrow. He was hard. But he called all those girls in there, and he said, look, no matter what happens after this, I want you to know I love you. All week I asked myself, should I tell him the rest of that story? Or should I just leave it there because love is enough, right? No, not for the both and congregation. Because, see, you do a great job of loving each other, loving me. I really try to love you back. That's important to me. But there's more. There's more. I want us to still be brave, courageous David fighting Goliath. I want us to be out there telling people there is another way to look at the gospel and the good news and what church is than the ones that seem to be carrying the day. There is a true Christianity that we are trying to get to. There is a Jesus that we are not just worshiping but trying to follow. And that's going to take some bravery and continued courage. And then there are also the times when we just put our arms around each other and say, thank God we're here together. So I want to tell you the rest of the story. The girls went out on the court. First time down the court, the opponents end. They're getting ready to score, and Katie steals the ball. And we are so excited. And Katie turns and looks down court towards our basket, and she sees our player running towards our basket, and she gets back, and about the same time, the head coach and I said, don't pass the ball! Because the person running down the court was our post player, Sarah, who couldn't catch a ball to save her life or dribble. But it was magic. And she caught the ball and she put it on the ground twice in a way that would have made Isaiah Thomas jealous. And then she went up for that layup and she threw that ball at that backboard so hard that it did not hit the ground until it got past the free throw line. It was a disaster. And by then, the Llano Yellow Jackets had come down. They picked it up. They headed toward their end again and we stole it. Again and again and again until Sarah, we called her Big Bird, stood at the line with a chance to win the game with 2 free throws. And she did. Practice, commitment, teamwork, all those things, it takes both. And we've got big things to do. We've got little things to do. I'm going to let you start with the little things. Here's what I need today before you leave. I need someone who will say, yep, I can help with security. That's a big thing. It's not a dangerous thing. We would never put you in danger. It's mostly about making eye contact, seeing who's coming in, letting us know if there's something we need to be watching out for, greeting the visitors, inviting them to park at the front. Scott has a training prepared and can help train you to do that. I'd love to get enough people where you only have to do it once a month, maybe twice. I need somebody else to help with the coffee ministry. You love it, right? You love the coffee cups. You love the coffee. But I need some more people to make it happen. Otherwise, maybe we go to coffee once a month. Maybe twice a month. I don't think that's what you want. So I need some coffee people today before you leave. And I need some AV people. We've got such dedicated people working AV, but they need some breaks too. You don't have to be an audio engineer. You don't have to have specialized experience. We can teach you. I mean, one of the jobs that we need is just somebody to advance the PowerPoint, to check it in the morning against the script, and then just to keep it going while we sing. And that's all we need. Three of the smaller jobs. Some of you, many of you, I talked to last week. Some more of you are going to have your phones ringing or your text buzzing. Don't be scared. I just want you to do what you already do, but I want us to do it with focus and with strategy. All you can do, the most authentic thing you can do, is do you. I am an older coach who knows how to find good people and bring them together and prepare them for what's ahead. But I have failed at it all if you don't know every minute of every day that I love you. Amen.